Blog Talk Radio.
ThorRadio.com.
Soul Sister Radio.
Whoever believes in me will do the same works I have done, and even greater works. This wasn't lip service. Jesus was talking to you. Every Soul Sister Friday at 10 a.m., learn how to claim your God-given dominion to follow the Master's example and restore health, demonstrate supply, harmonize relationships, and have victory over sin with Healing Through Prayer with Corrine Walson, spiritual solutions to life's challenges.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gift, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 4 International Soul Sister Radio. I am your producer, Maria DiGiovanni, welcoming you to the Soul Sister Experience. First, a special thank you to our station sponsor, ImageMakeoverProgram.com, who make it possible to record live and broadcast worldwide. We invite you to get ready to enjoy the show. Take it away, my soul sister.
Good morning. It's Corrine with Healing Through Prayer. So glad to be with you this morning at a new time at 8:30 a.m. Hope you're all awake. Today's topic is relationships. And for those who know me personally, this is going to draw a chuckle because I am not an expert on relationships. In fact, if anything, it is my Achilles heel. It's my weakness. It seems to be the biggest area of my life that I face that I've needed to overcome. But, you know, it's not people who totally have it all together and seem to have the answers that I want to hear from. It's those that have hit bottom and have come up that I think have the most to share. And I'm not here to say that I have all the answers. But in my journey from rock bottom to where I am today, God has definitely revealed stepping stones of truth and revelations that have assisted me. And, you know, I was thinking about my commercial, and part of it talks about harmonizing relationships, and I haven't delved into this because in the back of my mind it's the voice, who am I to talk about this? And God said, who are you not to talk about this? What I've shared with you can help others. And so all I'm doing today is speaking from my own personal experience, and I'm hoping that the truth that God has imparted to me will also help you. And I'm fairly confident that every listener, there's something in here that will help. So every one of us has some weakness that we grapple with, something that kind of comes around and around as a learning lesson, and it's asking for healing. And so problematic relationships has been mine. And for a long time, I felt like I've been on a hamster wheel and I couldn't get off. I used to get into a relationship and give 110% and expect the other person or my partner to give to the same extent and to make me happy. I mean, I wasn't consciously aware that I was doing that, but that's exactly what was going on. I had it all laid out in my head, what he would do, say, look like, how he should treat me, the things we would do together. And when they didn't perform correctly, I got to cite the laundry list of all the things that I did for them and make them feel badly. make me feel good, maybe for a moment, and they actually believe that I was the victim and that they were the bad guy. And because I have the skill of persuasion, you all have to remember that I'm a lawyer by trade, I can reach out and talk to my family, friends, or a complete stranger and have them nodding in sympathy at my story, holding my hand and telling me, oh, yes, honey, you deserve so much better. I had everybody convinced, including myself, that it was me. I was being treated unfairly. I needed love and sympathy. Well, it worked for a while, but after my second 10-year relationship ended, those closest to me became tired of hearing the same tale of woe. I even began to suspect that something might be wrong with me. So I started reading self-help books, discovered all about codependency, love addiction. I went to counseling. A little bit of progress was made, but I was still focused on what was wrong with my partner and what was wrong or bad about me. There was judgment, which still created a sense of separation, which I definitely believe is not the way to peace and salvation. I've since learned that all labels, good, bad, wrong, right, better or worse, are all the serpent's or mortal mind's handiwork and keeps us in a place of judging others, which is right where the serpent wants us to be. The Bible teaches us, judge not, lest ye be judged yourself. And Jesus taught us over and over to love our enemies, and that forgiveness of another's transgressions against us is crucial to our own salvation. We cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven with judgment in our hearts. There was a time I moved up to the mountains after my breakup with a second 10-year relationship, and I lived alone with my pets for a year. Discovered how to go out, eat alone, go for long drives by myself, empty space with just me. At first, it was difficult, but I learned to actually enjoy it. Before, being alone scared me, it actually gave me anxiety. I've battled the aftermath of abandonment for some time, and it wasn't until I fully understood my inseparability from God and from all his creation that I was healed of these anxiety attacks. I realized that at no time was I ever really alone. It's impossible. I also saw the evidence that God was with me and caring for me all along and still is. I got to the place that I could see the silliness in the belief of my being cut off from my Creator, and this battle with anxiety ended. Mary Baker Eddy describes our relationship to God in my favorite passage from Science and Health. As a drop of water is one with the ocean, a ray of light one with the sun, even so, God and man, Father and Son, are one in being. And the Bible declares we live, move, and have our being in him. And it just clicked one day that there's really no place we can find ourselves that God is not present. There's no condition we can pass through that God is not tenderly holding us. It's simply not possible to get outside of all in all. And I'm so grateful for this demonstration. So then fast forward, I met my current husband online. And the way he loved me and made me laugh, I mean, I felt like I was breathing fresh air for the very first time. I was certain that God was rewarding me for all that I did previously, at least that's what I convinced myself of. I dismissed some initial warning signs I was given because all I could focus on was the exhilaration of new love. After a year, we married. After 2 years, I was wiped out, giving 110%, expecting him to complete me and to make me happy, feeling depressed, and back to the starting gate again. Oh, man, how did I do this again? You'd think I would have learned by now. Apparently, there was and still is more to learn. There were times I was so angry and felt so taken advantage of that I moved out. My husband would come back and promise things would be different, and I'd go back, and things were different for a month. And we'd head right back to where we were before, arguing and being miserable. I felt so frustrated that I prayed nonstop, God, just give me a sign. Show me if I'm supposed to stay or go. Whatever you want me to do, forget my will, your will, I'll do it. And I meant it. I mean, I was just on my knees. And if God had given me a strong signal, one way or the other, I would have followed through. I prayed this prayer for years, and I never received an answer. One morning, in total desperation, I had purchased a CD. It was about listening and understanding the voice of God. And I listened to the CD on my way to work, and at the end of it, God spoke. He told me he was not answering my prayer because as soon as he told me to take a right turn or a left turn, I would have done it, but they've taken the situation back from him. God said he purposefully hasn't answered me because he wants me focused on him. And it was so true. It was so pure and so logical and so not from me. I knew it was God speaking. It was humbling, and I stopped praying to know whether I should stay or go, but simply that I would live life the way he wants me to. That was a very big moment for me personally. In Proverbs 3, 5, 6, we read, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." Well, I wanted God to direct my path, but I wasn't acknowledging him in all my ways. You know, I'm quick to tell others, you do your part, and he'll do his. The Bible says, there's some plans. I want you to focus on me, to acknowledge me in your life. Then I will direct your path. And God was right. Duh. So I stopped thrashing about between whether to leave or not and just got very serious about tending to my relationship with the God. He began to show me things that no amount of reading or counseling would have ever sunk in the way his wisdom has. I shared on a previous show how God has shown me in a subtle way that I punished my husband because I was angry at the previous men in my life and that withholding "I love you" from him when he said it to me first, or walking out of the room when I didn't like what he was saying in mid-sentence, was a way of my paying him back for the men who'd abandoned and ridiculed me in years before. That was a huge aha, awakening lesson moment for me. And although I've heard it said in various ways and places, I finally understood that my issue was seeking completeness and joy and safety outside of myself, because I didn't have it within me. I shared on a different show how around midnight I was restless and couldn't sleep, and God showed me a mental videotape of my life and how the lack of self-love has played out in every area of my life, especially relationships. I learned how I would interpret a harmless statement or the actions of another as a barb or a threat when there wasn't any, because I perceived the world through a pair of "I'm not lovable or worthy" glasses. I felt sorry for the men in my past relationships because even if they had done everything perfectly, I wasn't in the place to accept it or appreciate it. Instead of thanking someone for a compliment or kind gesture, I thought, what's wrong with them that they should be nice to me? I saw how truly insane this all was and how the lies of unworthiness and being unlovable had wound themselves intricately through my life. Now, I could have stopped at that point and felt really sorry for the lost years and time. Could have blamed my parents or others for not telling me I was lovable. I could have made a federal case out of it and blamed and judged. But isn't that exactly what the serpent would have me do? And don't I already know enough about the serpent and how it operates than to give into that mountain of negativity? Thank God I'm already on a spiritual path. Right then and there, I claimed that the human history is not the true story of Corrine. I claimed my birthright, God's spiritual and perfect child. I know that I'm lovable because love is my parent. Love is what I am. I am the image of love. I'm worthy because I'm the product of divine mind's creating, of knowing itself. I am created me, and God doesn't make mistakes. His work is perfect. Next, God showed me how to soften. Excuse my language, but I was always a hard ass, making sure the world knew I didn't need anybody, that I was fine and could take care of myself. that was way better in my mind than showing everyone how frightened I was at being alone and the insecurities I felt. And I've been slowly molded to tell my husband that I appreciate him and need him, to say I love you more, and to be more vulnerable, to share with him that soft underbelly, those things that I just don't want to show to anybody else. Sometimes my confiding in my husband would come back to bite me because in a moment of anger, he'll use that bit of private information against me. And then I'd shut down saying, I'm never going to do that again. But God showed me this was about me, no matter what response I get, no matter how it was received or not received, but to learn to speak from the heart and to speak honestly. This was for my benefit. And if I continue to practice this and become completely genuine and act from the heart, this will only serve to bless. The rest is simply games the serpent loves to watch us play, and they never bring the intimacy and love that we desire, but actually keep us from it. Mrs. Eddy writes in Science and Health, human affection is not poured forth vainly, even though it meet no return. Love enriches the nature, enlarging, purifying, and elevating it. So I was shown again that I believe that my actions were an attempt to get something from my husband, comfort or love, outside of myself. But God was showing me how to be the love that I wanted, so that it is who I am, and I won't look for it outside of myself, but turn inward to find that what I seek is already part of who I am. The kingdom of heaven is within us. And one of the biggest frauds committed upon us by the serpent is the illusion that we want, what we want and need is actually outside of ourselves. How many times do we find ourselves on this hamster wheel? I'll be happy when this is over. When I find a partner to share life with. When I get that job. When I move out there. When I have this much money. The antidote to this madness is to know that all that you truly desire, true love and happiness, contentment, is found within. And that's a scary thought for those of us who weren't taught to love ourselves or haven't taken the time to get to know who we are. The thought of what's within scares us because we're completely unfamiliar with what lies within ourselves, other than the pain that we've felt. But those are only serpent thoughts we've entertained. When I say go within, it means to go beyond the form of thoughts, to get quiet, to let go of all the chatter and distraction, and to simply allow what is to permeate your being, calling us to go inward where he is, not outside of ourselves. The serpent's aware of this and works overtime to fill up our days and time with so much activity, so many gadgets and things to do that we don't have time to sit and go inward. As long as our focus is outward on the unreal and temporary, instead of inward to the real and eternal, we don't progress. We might progress in the terms of what this world deems success, but like the Bible says, man's like a flower that withers away. We're here for a short time, and we can't take what we've accumulated with us. The real man is the one made in his image and likeness, and is spiritual and eternal. I now realize that our time and energy should be geared towards understanding who we truly are, and working to demonstrate more of the real inward man and take less thought for the outward and temporary man. Another lesson is that whomever we're with, we actually attracted that person to our lives. He or she is perfectly designed to show us where we need to awaken within ourselves. What I mean is, wherever I find fault or judgment in my husband, I have found that the issue is actually within myself. I was talking to this wonderful woman, her name is Cindy Tevens, and she wrote a book called The Alchemy of Joy and Love. And we were talking on the phone, and when we had first started out, she made a list of the qualities that I wish my husband would express more towards myself, or towards me. And after some time together, we came, or she showed me, and I came to realize that I was the one who was not being kind or investing time with or being more involved with myself. It was amazing to see that what I projected onto my husband were the very things I was withholding from myself. He's the billboard for my life to see where I need to invest more into myself. And I'm sure that I serve that purpose for him as well. The people in our lives are not there by accident. We've literally drawn them to us, and they are there to serve us by pointing us to the way back home, to our true selves. It's a whole new way of viewing our relationships. Instead of judging them, we thank them for the role they serve in our progress towards truth. So when issues arise, instead of immediately pointing your finger and making your case mentally against what he or she did and becoming self-righteous and telling others what a jerk they are, you can remove yourself from the scene and ask what your contribution to the situation was. Ask God to reveal to you what the lesson is in it that's in it for you, because there's definitely one there. Now, I'm not saying that you're always wrong and the other has no contribution. Both of you have come together. Both of you serve the other perfectly for the lessons each has to learn. So you see, you have a choice to make when the arguing occurs. You can continue to go outside of yourself, get caught up in the blame game, and become self-righteous and convince yourself that you're right and they're wrong. But all you've done is score a touchdown for the serpent. Or you can meet the situation with the least resistance, take some quiet time to reflect on it and to find the lesson in it for yourself, and to trust that God is working on your partner also. It's not up to you to assist, change, or convince the other of his or her lessons. That only leads to more trouble, and you got to trust me on this one, I know. The only power we have is over ourselves. The lessons you see for others in no way benefit you. You're here to discover who you are. And the more time and effort you put into this worthy cause, the more you're going to reap the benefits that accompany living an authentic life, like peace and joy and happiness. Keep the focus on yourself. Go inward. Seek and you'll find. Knock and it'll be opened to you. God has been tenderly and kindly revealing to me all that I need to know. And because it's from God, I can receive it without blame or feeling criticized. I also see how God places just the right people in my life at just the right time to confirm these lessons. I've wrestled with the question of, well, how long do you stay with somebody, or where does marriage come into the equation? I believe that saying that those we meet for either a brief lesson or a reason, a season, or a lifetime. Those we meet along our day at the store, at work, they're the ones that have small invitations to us to see a situation differently, to see the child of God in everyone we encounter, to greet others in love, to practice non-judgment, acceptance, tolerance, peace. Those we have in our lives for a season might be a friend that ends up moving away, or simply you grow apart, or a love relationship that doesn't blossom into something more serious. We can thank them for the lessons they impart, because whether we realize it or not, we're different because of our interaction with them. We learn. We either learn what we don't want to do any further, or the goodness in us is affirmed by that person. It's really up to us what we take away from each encounter. And until we learn the lesson that God has, you can be sure the same lesson will continue to come to us behind the face of somebody new, over and over, until we choose to accept it and learn. Only when we've allowed the lesson to transform us from the false to the real will the lesson stop chasing us down. And it was this understanding that's kept me planted in my marriage. I'm certain that the same lessons will come to me behind a different face if I chose the path of divorce. There are no shortcuts. We must unlearn what the serpent has taught us and exchange those false beliefs for what God has and continues to teach us. Just when I think I can't take any more, another revelation comes to me, and I learn more about myself than I ever could have alone. Gary Zukav is an author who wrote Seed of the Soul. You may have heard about it. Oprah Winfrey devoted an entire show to his book. But he recently wrote another one entitled Spiritual Partnership. And this book really confirms what I've shared here, that we attract those that are the most suitable to help us transform, and that there's a type of spiritual contract or agreement going on that allows each partner to best serve the other on their spiritual path. And I know that my husband has been the most powerful influence for good on my spiritual path awakening. And because this awakening is now my number one priority, I see the value in it. But all of this has opened my eyes about other relationships. So many people still look to their partner to fulfill them. They want something the other has to offer, status, money, recognition. And they may find it for a while, but ultimately the relationship will grow stale because these things fade. And the partner will then serve as a reminder that there is something more important going on, that the search outside of ourselves is not what we truly want, but discovering our true identity and living from who we are in God is why we're here. Unless the relationship is used for holy purposes or based on authentic love, they simply don't last. Something else that I've seen that I've tried to convey to my daughter is that we want partners who have trust in God or a higher power or whatever the label. When times get tough, and they will, you want to know that when your partner hits rock bottom in any phase of life, that he or she will turn to God instead of substances or the computer or gambling or seeking friends' advice. If your partner seeks answers from God, you can just simply rest assured that the outcome is going to be good and harmonious for each of you. If your partner seeks answers outside of themselves, the solution is as precarious as the problem. There are those of us who are with someone who may have started off seeking God and no longer prays for answers, or who are with someone who does not know God and has no desire to. In that case, our own prayers are sufficient to protect us, and our example will be, quote, a light on a hill that can influence our partners to turn to God. And finally, God has shown me how in times of conflict when we become self-righteous, that we cannot be molded by him or learn. Mrs. Eddy wrote, "Self-love is more opaque than a solid body. In patient obedience to a patient God, let us labor to dissolve with the universal solvent of love the adamant of error, self-will, self and self-love, which wars against spirituality and is the law of sin and death." That's pretty serious. Self-will, self-justification. I'm right, he's wrong. If only he could see it from my point of view, or my favorite, what an idiot. These are the law of sin and death. They shut the door on God. They are a wall, a literal barrier between us and are experiencing our oneness with him. I can go from peaceful to ballistic in under 5 seconds. I know this is a problem, and I have prayed to God for the strength to stop in the heat of it, to just be able to shut my mouth, to not react. I find that if I can do this and reflect back on what's happened, there's a lesson in it for myself. I had contribution at some level, and I can choose to stay humble, have humility, and allow God to show me what I need to know in the situation. So every single relationship we have is a teacher. It can be, run for your life because you are worth more than this. Or it can be a long partnership where the barriers between who you think you are and who you really are reflected back to you. We should appreciate each and every teacher along our path. Thank them for the lessons they bring to us. And be grateful that we aren't where we used to be. I'm the first one to tell you, again, I don't have all the answers about relationships, as mine have always been difficult. But I'm grateful for the lessons that I've learned along the way. I know I'll learn some more, and I'll share with you again on this topic. But the lessons that I have been shown, I felt were worth sharing with all of you. Thank you for spending your time with me this Friday morning, and I look forward to spending next Friday morning with you as well. Much love.
ForRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, the anointing of mercy from the heart of a parish nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston and Wall Street Journals. Journey to my father's palace, destiny, coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Coffee Talk with Patricia.
Welcome, everyone. Good morning. It's Patricia Wynn Schoonis, your host for Coffee Talk with Patricia. I hope you have a chance to grab a cup of hot coffee and conversation with us this morning. And we have a great special guest today, Ryan Burris. He is the Chief Relationship Officer at the Orange County Rescue Mission and also a very dear friend of mine for many, many years. And today we're going to talk about life, career, community, love, faith, and self. And it's reassuring to talk to men that are okay with walking in their faith. As you know, we've had many men in the past on the show with Coffee Talk with Patricia, and just talking about what they do with their faith and their daily challenges and struggles. So we'll share that today as well. But let me go ahead and start with a prayer for friendship today. You have blessed us, O God, with the gift of friendship, the bonding of persons in a circle of love. We thank you for such a blessing for friends who love us, who share our sorrows, who laugh with us in celebration, who bear our pain, who need us as we need them, who weep as we weep, who holds us when words fail, and who gives us the freedom to be ourselves. Bless our friends with health, wholeness, life, and love. Amen. That is a powerful message of a prayer for friendships. I treasure my friendships with everyone that I walk with each and every day, and the strength and growing with one another. Your friendships can become your family. So welcome, Ryan. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate you taking out the time to share a little bit about yourself and your past and your present and your future as well as your faith.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and start with just a little bit of who is Ryan Burris?
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'm currently serving as the Chief Relationship Officer at the Orange County Rescue Mission, which means that I oversee fundraising and development. When I'm not here, then I'm overseeing fundraising and development at my home with my wife, Julie, and our three kids. We have a 9-year-old boy, a 7-year-old girl, she just turned 7, Catherine, and Emma is 3.
What a beautiful family you do have, too, and it's great for me as your friend and somebody that works with you to be able to see the love and the commitment that you have within your family and that dynamic. I think I just told you that recently, that, you know, we all have interesting and loving and caring families in many different ways, but to see yours and to see how you guys bond together and respect one another and love one another, and I think it's just something that not everyone does have, and so I know that you're very grateful for that love, and especially also the faith that your family carries.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a blessing. We all of us on both sides of our family actually live close. We all live in Southern California. Most of us live within 10 to 15 minutes of each other, and we see each other, I would say, 2 or 3 times a week, typically. During the holidays, it's even more than that. But we just have a great time together. We love each other. We respect each other, although we don't always agree with everything. But we just enjoy the fact that we are a big family.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, and it's pretty remarkable to see how your beautiful, precious, loving wife, Julie, which is an amazing woman as well, and an amazing mother. Gosh, I see her with her children and your children, and it's pretty remarkable to see how she manages. I always say four children, although you have three, but I always include you in there as the fourth.
Yeah, most people call her and my mom saints.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That just
exactly.
Gives you a little idea.
Yeah, it's really nice. And it's also good to see how your family, again, with your faith and your children, that, it's interesting, it left such a lasting impression with me when I was at your house for dinner that just recently, and to see your children actually wanting to not fight but debate over who wanted to give the prayer, and even mm-hmm. Emma, being as young as she is, she wanted to say that prayer. And that, in today's time, I mean, you guys have to take a compliment for that and kudos, because that is pretty a powerful message.
Yeah, but that's pretty neat. And actually, Emma, I mean, she doesn't care who takes the prayer. She'll speak right over them. So I think being the youngest, that's just sort of what – that's what they do, because they have to fight for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, she even fights for her prayer time.
That's wonderful. So, you're blessed with an amazing family. And, why don't you share with the callers a little bit about, how did you meet me, Patricia, and, our friendship and so forth moving forward?
Well, when I left Disney, I was there, and I actually met Julie in guest relations. We were tour guides at Disney in 1997. In 2003, I was an English major and I was actually graduated at that point from college finally, although it took me so long I could have been a doctor. But I was just an English lit major. I moved from Disney to the Orange County Sheriff's Department and was actually hired as the speech writer for Sheriff Mike Corona in January of 2003. And what's really cool about that is that I met you. It had to be January or February that year, so you had just started your organization. I also met Jim Palmer, the president of the rescue mission, in January or February, and that is who I now work for. So, that transition created friendships that will last a lifetime. So that was a huge blessing. I was overseeing the sheriff's calendar and kind of the relationships and things like that, which is why I came to know a lot of the founders and friends of nonprofits who we wanted to work with at that time with the Sheriff's Department.
It's very interesting. You think about how things go full circle in a sense, and to think about that you met, Jim and myself around the same time, and then just to think where everything has come and went throughout these last 10 years and where you're at now, and that we're all still not only friends, but we're all, in a sense, collaborating and partnering and working together, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it.
Yeah, I guess the only way really to look at it is God knows what he's doing. And although it seems to take forever, and there's definitely uphill and downhills to everything, he has a plan. And as long as we're working with him, it works out okay for us.
I agree. And as long as we're honest and respectable, and as long as we have that where we're open to follow God's plan and his guidance.
Yeah.
We do have struggles and obstacles that we cross throughout, but knowing that we're doing the right thing and working together and trusting and depending on whatever that is supposed to be, it will be. And we don't have to always agree to it, but we have to be open to it.
Oh, well, I mean, even when you're married, you don't agree to everything. So, you can't expect the same thing with friends and with people that you're working with either. You just got to be nice.
Yeah. Well, and, unfortunately, we try to be nice and we try to respect one another. And whether it be in our career, in our life, in our families, community, in your commitment, in your relationships and so forth, and even within ourselves, we have to try to be honest and open, and we have to walk the path like the Pope recently said, in the sense of we have to treat each other with respect and dignity, and we have to love one another. Unfortunately, in the times that we're in, and we all know, not everyone is as kind and generous and supportive, and some people are very, jealous or out for revenge or want to hurt other human beings, and maybe because they're hurting themselves so much within themselves. And sometimes they don't have the faith. They say they walk in faith, but sometimes they don't have the faith. So I think it's people like yourself that have to try to still continue to walk in the faith and bring out the best in everyone and be forgiving.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's not easy. I think what I guess strikes me with loving your enemies or treating your neighbors as you love yourself, basically, is that I think it's so hard for people to love themselves, and that's why they're bullies or they're mean, and because they can't even get to the point where they're comfortable in their own skin and they love themselves. So how could they possibly treat others with anything sort of love when they don't even know how to do it to themselves?
That's very true. That is very, very true. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what are you working on now at the Orange County Rescue Mission? What are some of the needs of the rescue mission? So maybe people that are listening today will be able to help, especially with the holidays coming up, with Thanksgiving and with Christmas. And I know you have so many programs that you are working at the rescue mission. What are some of the, you know, needs that you guys have or things that maybe you are working within the agency?
Okay. We have a need for almost 21,000 meals a week right now. We are probably the most comprehensive, the most beautiful, actually, homeless shelter, if you can call it that, in the nation. We're located in Tustin. We're on the former El Toro Marine Base. And we have 192 beds here. We're serving, I believe right now we have 65 kids ages 0 to 12 living with us, with their moms or their dads or both parents. The goal for us here is what we talk about this time of year is serving hope. So we want to take people off of the streets and out of the darkness that they have and then transition them into a life that's happy, healthy, and self-sufficient, relying on God, basically. And so this time of year, about 21,000 meals a week. We tell everyone, obviously, food is one of the major things that we offer, especially in building relationships with people out on the streets. So, you know, you feed their immediate needs and you build relationships after that, learn their names, pray with them, see them consistently every week, and then start building that trust so that at some point it's easy for them to leave the comfort of the streets, which sounds crazy, but that's the way it is to a lot of homeless, and move into something that is structured and will create for them a better life. So that's what we're working on right now. We talk about food because, you know, a lot of us are blessed with big families and we'll have big feasts for Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so we're reminded at those times that we're blessed and that we need to share that with others. I oversee the fundraising and development communications part of the organization. And we'll bring in about 50% of our income in the last 3 months of the year, October, November, and December.
That's pretty remarkable. That's amazing. And it kind of really stresses to the fact to the communities that the people open up their hearts, especially during the holidays. And, you know, if we all just remembered that, you know, we have a warm meal and we have a warm blanket and, you know, we have all of the things in our lives, and some of us may not have everything, but what we do have, we have to be grateful for, and we have to remember that there's always someone out there that has less than us and that is in need. And if we take that extra time to consider the Orange County Rescue Mission or another charity or whatever that may be to give back to someone that is in need, and it doesn't have to be always a large check, but it can be canned foods, it can be a blanket, it can be how many children are walking even throughout Orange County that have no socks and shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was out in Santa Ana feeding the homeless with our volunteers and last night, and there we will usually see, they're not homeless per se, they're not unsheltered, but they still have a need. They can't, you know, month to month rent and food and stuff is expensive, especially in Southern California. So we will see them out there. We'll feed them, and then we'll also take items. Last night we were giving blankets and toys away to some of the kids that we saw, and it just fills a little bit of that need. But it also reminds the kids that they're not forgotten, and that somebody loves them, which is crucial, especially when they're young like that. So we're out about 3 nights a week consistently on the streets of Orange County, feeding the homeless, feeding the working poor, the underserved, and like I said, just out there trying to reach their hearts and build those relationships.
That's remarkable. And if someone, say for instance, someone is in need, who would they contact? How would they get in contact with someone? And do you find it challenging for people that are really in need, that maybe weren't in need maybe a year or 2 years ago, that they feel embarrassed or they feel afraid to reach out? And does it make a difference when someone does either walk into the rescue mission or if they call, like who greets them and talks to them so that they don't feel that?
Well, we do have an 800 number. So if somebody needed help, they could call 1-800-663-3074. That goes to our main line, reception line here. So you're either going to be speaking to residents of our program who live with us or to either our receptionist or our guest service supervisor. And, you know, we've heard everything on the phone, and we can't fix or help with everything, but we can at least point people in the right direction. We've had volunteers who've had to come to us, especially after the economy crashed and everything's been so challenging the last few years, who have come to us and said, now I need help. And we've had families in the same crisis where they were doing just fine, they had teaching jobs and master's degrees. And with budget cuts and everything else, they get to the point where it's like, we can't do this by ourselves anymore and we need help. So we've heard everything. And our goal is to love people and serve them. So if they call here, that's what we're going to do. And we will try to help you out of the situation you're in.
And is there any restrictions or guidelines? I mean, if someone was to, say, call for, like if they were in a gang or they were, you know, under the influence or they, you know, maybe not at the present time, but are there, you know, financial, you know, do they have to meet certain criteria at all or...
We have gang members in our program. We have guys that were recently out of prison in our program. We don't have any financial restrictions. We don't require people to pay to be in the program when you're in here until after a certain point when you're working. And then that's a program fee to help get people prepared for real life, which means you have to budget. You're going to have to pay for food. You're going to have to pay for rent. So let's get you ready to do those things. But when they first come in here, some of them have just been released from prison. Some of them are just, you know, gang members trying to get out of that, or drug addicts, or substance abusers who, depending on the length of time and stuff, we may want you to be in a sober program first before you come in here. But all of those things are determined by our admissions manager, who will typically speak to someone on the phone and then have a face-to-face interview.
That's wonderful. That gives people, you know, and again, with faith, it gives people something to hold on to and an opportunity to be able to know that, you know, there is someone out there that no matter what they've endured in their life or the mistakes that they've made, that there's always another chance. There's always hope to be able to have that love and that faith and that peace. So, So amazing to see that.
Our faith teaches us that. I mean, no matter what you've done, you can always go back to God and ask for forgiveness and get it because He loves you and He made you. I always think about when Jesus was killed on the cross, the two guys that were with him who were being crucified at the same time, one of them up until the very end. He was the first one home with Jesus because he recognized Jesus and was forgiven. Jesus told him, "You'll be with me in paradise." So up until the very end, that's possible for people. The first one home was a thief. I remind people when I'm talking to them about forgiveness and redemption, because it is so possible for everyone.
Yeah, that's remarkable. And, you know, how did the rescue mission start, and how did it get to where it's at today? Because I know that it started off one way, and then to see where it's at today, and when I go there and I see and I walk through there, you know, you would never think that that would be a place that would be a rescue mission, and it is absolutely remarkable. And not only that, is not only the structure and the outside of it, but it seems like the structure inside is just remarkable, and that the staff work together as such a loving, caring, respectable team, and caring about the community. And so, you know, it's pretty remarkable to see. So how did it get to that point?
Well, it started with a Marine sergeant who would drive to work onto the base and see homeless sleeping and living underneath bridges and places on his way to work. So he started feeding people out of the trunk of a car, out of his car. And it just grew from there. Jim Palmer, our president, has been the president for 21 years. When he started with the organization, the rescue mission was $90,000 in debt, and he made a deal with God and said, "Look, help me get out of this debt, and we will not take any debt again." And at the time when he started, the fundraising would work where they would stop everything else in the program, gather together, you know, put all of the letters asking for money in envelopes, stamp them, address them, pray over them, and send them out so that they could make payroll. And as they got out of debt and as they grew, the fundraising and we call it faith-based fundraising because our donors are so faithful. But they see what we do, and so many of them are called to support us because our mission is to serve the love of Jesus Christ. And it's grown into us. We will have a budget of $17.4 million this year, and that includes all seven of our campuses, our medical clinics, which are open to the public and are designated to serve the homeless, and then all the 500 beds that we have organizationally.
Wow.
And
gosh,
we still do not have
amazing.
We don't have any mortgage debt, and we don't build without having cash in the bank to pay for it.
And why do you think this is? How do you think that this has turned around and changed? I mean, obviously, I think it's a team and obviously an amazing leader at the top. But, I mean, do you think that it goes way beyond that?
You have to get people passionate about your vision. And that happens just by getting people here to see what we do and how we do it. That's definitely part of it. I think telling the stories of the people who are in our program and to see that life change and that restoration and that heart change is huge for our donors. We also have such great partners out on our board of directors and out in the community who, when we need something or we ask for something or we're getting ready to build something new, they are right there by our sides asking us, "What do you need?" And we will get it done. So it's amazing. It's like we see miracles like that every single day. And definitely I think that the biggest reason for that is because we are called at the top of the organization to be guided by God. And so that means we have to be in our word. We have to be in prayer. We lead that at the top of the organization. And then like this morning, like every morning, Monday through Friday, we gather as a group of residents and staff in our prayer room, and they were in there for half an hour this morning doing a devotion, praying over specific needs of people or things that we're working on as an organization, and then moving on about our business, knowing that we're being guided by the right place.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. And I mean, you have the faith within the structure as well. So I'm for me, I'm looking at it as an outsider that you say, well, you have all of these donors and you have this wonderful team that's doing amazing work, but let's not forget that the one that knows it the most is the Lord, and he's the one that's kind of guiding it and protecting it and making sure that everything that needs to be provided for is provided for.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so that's remarkable. So, you know, let me ask you this. What do you do for yourself, like for Ryan Burris, like as a man, as a husband, as a father, and separate from, say, career, but what do you do to take time for you and to make sure that you're empowered and strengthened and walk in your life each and every day?
Well, I would say over the last year especially, that has become a more critical thing for me. Part of it is because of the way that we're guided in the organization to make sure that we are connected deeply to God and that we are following him and his word and his direction for each of us. It has changed over the course of the year, so it was less structured last December than it is going into this December. I am typically up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning and will go downstairs and have a cup of coffee and sit down with my Bible or just in silence with some candles lit and just pray. And sometimes it's just silent, sitting in silence and sort of just waiting to hear God, or, you know, sometimes there's specific people that he's bringing to me that I need to lift up. He will guide me in areas that in the Bible that I need to look at and read. So that's probably that's been the most significant lately, because it helps me get deeper into that. And really, it puts me in the right frame for the day. I read a lot. We go to Mass every Sunday. We have a lot of family time, which is important. So it helps keep you grounded. Just learning really that, you know, Jesus calls us to pray always, which means that it must be possible. But what does that look like? For me, it looks like everything that we are doing during the day could be in the spirit of prayer. We could work with God, whether we're talking to people or we're doing email or we're listening to music. But if we keep that connection and you learn the habits to do that, then it just helps keep you grounded and it helps keep you focused on God without putting other idols or other things in the way.
Interesting. And so do you have, I mean, because I know you're very public and you're very outspoken about your faith. What is your faith? Why don't you share with everyone what is your faith and your belief?
I am a Christian who lives out my traditions in the Catholic Church, and I've done that probably, I think, 12 or 13 years now. I was Lutheran before that. If someone were to ask me, I guess, what does that mean to me? It means that Jesus is my Savior, and I need him every day. That is just the absolutely critical piece I think people need to understand, is that you need him every single day.
Well, so you mentioned that you were Lutheran and now you're Catholic, Christian, walking in your faith. So was that challenging on changing from Lutheran to Catholic, and how did that process work?
No, it's actually, I mean, they're pretty similar in a lot of ways. I was just reading a book by a Lutheran pastor, and even the way that she describes the liturgy and the tradition, the Eucharist of the Lutheran Church, so much of it is so similar that you know, going from the Lutheran service to the Mass was not really that different. It was a neat thing for me because I was an English major, so I loved to read, and I had friends who were on the side against me joining the Catholic Church, who challenged me in a lot of ways and asked a lot of great questions that forced me to really dig in deep and find the answers and make sure I was comfortable with it. The Catholic Church, to me, the things I love the most about it are the fact that it is a faith that has been handed down for, you know, 2,000 years, basically. It is something that seems so sure, especially in a world where there is nothing sure. but it has stood the test of time. I love the liturgy. I love the fact that, you know, we get to go through these seasons reminded of Gabriel talking to Mary about having conceived Jesus, that we get to go into Advent preparing for the Lord's birth again, that we get to go into Lent preparing for his death and what he did for us. However, with all that being said, the church, any church on earth, you know, is only as strong as her representatives, so we're all flawed. If the church fell today, I would still have Jesus. So, you know, my faith isn't built in those walls. It's built in Jesus and our Father who created us.
That's wonderful. It's good to see, it's good to hear, and, you know, it's interesting because a lot of men, especially more so men than I think women, you know, are afraid to share and speak out about their faith. And I know that you don't have that fear. I know that you're big on Facebook with posting about your readings and your, you know, the Bible and walking in that. And, you know, I think it's pretty remarkable. I always say that because a lot of men are, because I don't know why. I don't know what the reason behind why anybody would be afraid. I guess maybe even in my circumstance, I was silenced for a while because someone said something to me, and so I didn't talk about my faith. But now for me, I share it. I walk in it. I have no fear. So, hey, there's my doggy.
I think one of the things is, it's like for me, I don't want to debate my faith. I think that you lose focus of the fact that God's our creator. And so that's just something that gets in the way. I don't like to debate it. I will tell you in broad terms why I am the way I am, but to get down into the doctrinal issues, I think is more Satan's doing than anything. So I think that's probably why a lot of people don't like to talk about it. The other thing is, you just, like for me, 2 years ago before I joined this specific faith-based organization, I wasn't even comfortable praying in public. I had a faith, and I had a strong faith, and I read the Bible, but it has deepened over the last 2 years, partly because it had to. I was coming in as a Catholic in a non-denominational world, so there was even a bit of an issue with that. I think a lot of people are still shocked that I know the Bible as well as I do, because unfortunately there are many Catholics who are not well-versed in it and who have not been taught well, which I think was a bad thing for the church, and it remains a bad thing for the church. But, you know, getting deeper into that and then just having God sort of pull me out of all of my comfort zones, and I guess just having to rely completely on him to say, all right, I can't do this on my own. I'm scared to death about this, but I'll let you do it. And then just sort of leaning on him through that. So the last 2 years especially have been significant as far as my faith and just the deepening of my relationship with Jesus.
I think that is in our times, because I feel the same way about myself. I feel like, you know, with my faith and my trust and just going through everything that I have, I think that my faith is just growing stronger and stronger. And so to see you walking in that and to see some of our other friends as well, and I think it's a lot of healing and a lot of prayer and a lot of friendships and family as well, walking together in it, I think it's pretty impactful and powerful.
Well,
so,
the other part of that for me is that I am the spiritual leader of my house, and I don't want to get to a point someday where I feel like our kids have been led astray or left alone in the fact that they don't have a strong faith, and we have a hard time liking ourselves as it is and being comfortable in our own skin. So the fact that we can look to a creator who made us and who loves us completely and unconditionally is huge, and I know it saved my life. It saved my life when I was 20. I know that. So to be able to make sure and to really instill it in my kids' hearts is so important, because they will need that. This world is hard. So I think to have Jesus is to have hope, and sometimes hope is all we have.
That's right. And on that last message of hope, what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some fun things, some interesting things, and some things about the holidays that are coming up, as well as healing prayer with Ryan Burris. So give us a second, and we'll be right back.
ForRadio.com. Now a message from our sponsor, EducateEtiquette.com. Have you ever been at a table with a group of people and there is one person being rude on their cell phone? Have you mentioned it to that person and they still do it as if they just don't care as much for those around them in the flesh as they do for their own personal thread on Facebook? It's even worse when you're around our older generation who really have a hard time understanding how people can form relationships this way. There is wisdom in their thinking, so please don't be rude. Put it away in respect, yourself most of all. Thank you for joining us on Soul Sister Enterprise, and please visit us at www.educateetiquette.com.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
ForRadio.com.
Hello, welcome back to Coffee Talk with Patricia, and I am Patricia, your guest host, and we have Ryan today. And Ryan, are you still there?
I am.
Perfect. So let's talk a little bit about healing prayer and what that means and represents, and I know you're working on that a lot, so I'd like to know a little bit more about that.
Okay. We started looking deeper into healing prayer actually when we brought Church at the Mission, who serves at the Rescue Mission, and their plan is to plant churches at all of our Rescue Mission campuses and probably beyond that, so at other Rescue Missions as well. Very dynamic church, very energetic. They love Jesus. They love the least, the last, and the lost. That's their mission statement. So they were doing that through their church, and we've hired several of their personnel to come in and actually work in the Rescue Mission. One of them you spoke to a couple of weeks ago, Brett Ryan, who is a case manager with us. He studied healing prayer for the last year, and I actually went through it as a process of counseling that I went through earlier this year. The way that it works here is that Brett is the lead person. Will bring someone in who wants to have this healing prayer, and we'll sit with them for 2 hours, sometimes in several sessions, and then lead them through. And we ask them a questionnaire, ask them about their life history, their family, things they've been involved with when they were younger, or even up till, I guess, you know, last week, Ouija boards, other things that are going to create spiritual junk inside of a person that brings on all kinds of issues, you know, guilt, shame, self-hate, accusation, and all the negative talk we hear. So we go through that. We lead them through a process of forgiveness, of renouncing past sins, and then dig in deep into some of the wounds that people are covering up with using the wrong things. So, you know, the pain of a wound, if it's a wound that is open, stinks and does not heal. So getting into those wounds and then using the right thing for it, which for us is Jesus, getting him in there to help heal it and validate these individuals again, so that we're not trying to numb the pain with things like drugs or alcohol or pornography. So it's, you know, it's typically a two-hour process. Brett prays out loud. I get to be in there as the intercessor. So my job is silent for 2 hours, praying over the prayee, praying over Brett, the room, and then just sort of listening and waiting for God's guidance in anything that I may need to tell Brett to, you know, to dig in deeper on, or, you know, just watching the process like that.
Well, and so you've done the healing prayer yourself.
Yeah, I went through it myself.
And, you know, for people that are listening, do you highly recommend, obviously you recommend it, but how do you think that it would be good to take that first step? Because I know, you know, a lot of people may be concerned or afraid or, you know, scared for whatever reason. What would you suggest to them?
Well, I guess I'll start with my whole process, which is that I went to a Wild at Heart boot camp in February. And Wild at Heart is something, it's a book by John Eldridge. He does boot camps with the Ransomed Heart team all around the world. They start one this evening in Colorado for guys who have been through the first one. There's an advanced one. That's what he's starting tonight with his team. I went there, and I left, and there were significant wounds that I didn't know about really until December of last year, and God just kind of revealed them to me, probably to prepare me for what I was going to go through at the boot camp, because I'd read John Eldridge's book twice, and I could not identify those wounds, and then, bang, it hit me in December. So I went through the boot camp, and a lot of it is sort of that inner healing, you know, the search for how do we work as men? How are we wired? Why does it feel like there's all this chaos inside? Why are we so bored and resigned to life? Why are we doing things like drugs and alcohol and pornography, which, you know, just create this endless cycle of, we need to be validated, we do the wrong things, and then we have guilt and shame and everything else that comes with it. So why do we do that? I left the boot camp, and the whole thing for me was just huge. It was like gigantic weights lifted off of my shoulders. The negative talk inside of me was gone. I realized on the Monday that I returned, I'm less angry. But I was still seeking things, like asking God, who am I to you? What is my name? What do you call me? What are you calling me for? What are you calling me into? And mostly that was silent until I finally one morning, you know, said, I can't do this by myself. You know, what is this going to take? And that's when he said, find a counselor. So I found a Christian counselor. Terrified to death to go in there that first time, because it's like going into confession. I want to know, you know, I think I told the counselor the first day, my life feels like it's in chaos. I'm not comfortable in my skin, and I want to know who I am. And unless you're going to be wholly honest with yourself and with the person who's helping you, you can't get there. So, you know, I just threw everything out there for him and let him pick it up and figure out where to start. So that process was once a week for an hour for a while, and then it was once every other week, and then once a month, and then we just ended it in September. So through that process, you know, finding that significant wound came from my grandfather, who at the age of 7 had told me in an you know, angry alcoholic fit of rage that I was a nobody, I was in the way, I was a wimp, I was a girl, all of those things, really had... Instead of looking to God to figure out who I was living sort of the way that my grandfather told me I was. So the healing prayer for me was going back into that place in the kitchen of my grandparents' house, reliving that wound again, and then asking Jesus where he was, because he's omnipresent, he's everywhere, and he was there. I was angry for many years at my grandma, who did not speak up for me and did not stop it, and I was angry over myself because I did not speak up and did not stop it, even at the age of 7. That just made me angry. Well, you know, asking Jesus into that, he was in front of me. He was standing between me and my grandfather. And what Jesus told me after this healing experience was, I didn't let you speak. And then what was even more moving for me was that he pointed me to look at my grandma and said she couldn't either. She lived it. She lived it every day. So being able to get that healing and then go out and say, you know, I am a strong man of God, and I could live that because that's what God has told me, it's a completely different life. Feeling comfortable in your skin is different. The chaos is gone. So that was this last year, this process for me. That's, you know, in June, I think, was the healing prayer. And then I went into to training to do it for other people in September. And then we started earlier this month here at the Rescue Mission.
Well, you know, first and foremost, I have to thank you, obviously, for sharing and for being so open and honest, because I think that, at least for me, I've learned, and it's not always easy, and I know that, and, you know, with judgment and blame and shame and society, the way they like to bully and ridicule or question or doubt and, you know, all of those things. And I've learned even myself personally, you know what, we have to let all of that go because we are walking in our faith and we have to trust in the Lord. And when we do share and we do put ourselves out there, like you're putting yourself out there and you're sharing a part of your past, but also a great part of hope and to be able to heal. And so I applaud and recognize you for that, because I know it's not easy, but I do know, and I hope you do know, by taking your personal experience and sharing it with other people, men, children, women, elderly, whoever it is that will listen, it will impact them a great deal, and it will allow them to come out and share and talk and to be able to heal. So thank you for doing that. I hope you know that by you sharing it, it is impacting another life.
Yeah, no, I have the privilege now of being able to share this with the guys in our Wild at Heart that we do here at the Rescue Mission. So we tell our stories and we tell the low places. In 2 weeks, I will be talking a little bit about the wound, but then sort of the call into adventure, which is just, it is built into our hearts and is something that validates us in the fact that we do have what it takes to do these things and to take this risk and adventure. And we can do it in a way that's healthy when God is leading us and we are using the passions and gifts he gave us. So for me to be able to experience that that healing and to go through this process, if I were to be quiet about it now, I would not be serving God, because there are so many other people who need to know and hear that, that I have to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you for that. I mean, definitely I applaud you, like I said, because, you know, it does make a difference. So, you know, keep sharing, keep talking, keep getting the message out there. And, you know, thank you for impacting my life, because, you know, I treasure our friendship. I respect it. I value, you know, your friendship and your family's respect and trust. And I feel like I am part of your family now, and it's just so welcoming.
Absolutely.
And it makes my heart and soul. You know, when I was with you the other day at you know, that a party, it was just so impactful for me. And, you know, I love to give and I love to help, and I love to be able to feel wanted and accepted and valued and appreciated. And there is no monetary amount, whether you're giving to a community or whether you're going and volunteering your time or whether you're helping a friend. To me, that's priceless, and it warms the heart and soul. So I also stress, as we approach this holiday season, for all that is listening out there, you know, take time to do something for your family that doesn't cost any money. The greatest gift does not come in a box wrapped in a bow. The greatest gift is the time of love and acceptance and respect and appreciation. And, you know, whether you pick up the phone and you call your family member, or whether you just go for a cup of coffee or a walk around the block. And whether you take the time to go help a friend, and it could be a small gesture, it could be a large gesture, something that doesn't cost money. Get out and do something for your community. I know, Ryan, you live that every day. You know that I live it every day. It warms the heart and soul. So when you can do something for your friends and your family, your coworkers, don't do it with your pocketbook or your money. Do it with your heart, because that is impactful.
Yep.
So we both know that we love the holidays. I know that you love Christmas as much as, or maybe even more than I do, which I don't know how that's even possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Thanksgiving coming up and with Christmas, what is, like, some of the things that not only do you do, but what are some of the, like, fun and exciting? I know that you're already listening to Christmas music, as I am. I was listening to it this morning as I was getting ready. And, mm-hmm. you know, it just, there's something about Christmas music. I always wish that someone would come up with that kind of music all throughout the year that has that same tone and that same upbeat and that same peaceful and hopeful message. But what is it that you do for, like, Thanksgiving and for Christmas that really impacts your spirit?
Well, it's funny because they put me in charge of music here at the Village of Hope. So we have speakers throughout the campus, and we put music in. And so I switched it on Monday to Christmas. And I've only heard from a few people who have complained. And typically the music here, you can't find music that makes everyone happy. So we're pumping in Christmas music already. And for the most part, people are okay with it. We have a lot of traditions in our family. Thanksgiving, we're actually getting together with both sides of my family this year. So Julie's parents and my parents, our brothers and sisters, nephews and nieces, and, you know, sons and daughters are all going to one place to hang with aunts and uncles and just everyone. So I would say 50 or 60 people will be there. And that's just a joy-filled day where we just hang out and just get to be one big family, which is great because not all families are like that. We will start decorating for Christmas the day after Thanksgiving. So I finally bought an artificial tree a few years ago. Don't judge me for that.
Yeah.
That we put up in the front room. We'll probably have one or two other trees that we'll go out and pick up at a tree lot to put in the rest of the house. I think my parents might be decorating for Christmas this weekend. We'll gather at families' homes throughout the month of December, doing gingerbread houses and making tamales and hanging out for Christmas Eve and spending Christmas Day together. There's a lot of church in that, which is fantastic. And then just really preparing for that time. So at night, I have some devotions that are specifically written towards Christmas that I will read, and we'll start digging into the stories of Jesus's birth in the Gospels and with the kids, and just sharing those stories and lighting the fireplace and putting the Christmas lights up and just loving it. I always hate when it ends.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, but are you starting late this year? Because I know you've been listening to Christmas music and everything else, but are you wearing your Christmas shirts? Because I haven't seen any Santa hats, and I know you're on Facebook, and I haven't really seen a lot of the Christmas stuff that I'm used to seeing in the last 10 years. So I think you're slacking off a little. I think you need to catch up a little bit.
I might, but the problem is that I found some really cool Thanksgiving Hawaiian shirts.
Oh.
So I will pull those out for the month of November. So it does put me back a little bit, but
okay,
I've been listening
well.
To Christmas music for months. I'll take a picture of the shirt and put it on my Facebook page today.
Yes, so that would be
it.
Good.
Julie, my wife, calls it a tablecloth, and it could be. It would be a nice one. It has turkeys and eggs and nests and holly on it.
Oh, yes,
and it's the
we
Hawaiian
definitely
shirt.
Have to see that. We for sure have to see that. So, yeah, catch up a little bit because, you know, I need also, I'm always singing around the house and, you know, all of that stuff. But even the other day I was looking in my jewelry box and going through some of my earrings and stuff, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to wear these today. And then, interesting enough, I found, you remember the DeVargases, Vince and Diane?
Yes.
It's interesting because years ago they would say they've never met anyone as crazy about Christmas as I am until they met Ryan Burris.
Mm-hmm.
And
no,
so
it's true.
Yeah, so it's funny because I was going through my books of Christmas stuff and a lot of my books that I have, and one of the books that they actually gave me, it's called A Bit of Applause for Mrs. Claus. And so it's interesting because they had wrote inside of it that they've never met anyone like a Mrs. Claus like me. So,
mm-hmm.
It's, yeah.
Great.
So, yeah.
Well,
so it's really great.
I grew up in a home where, like, when we lived in Colorado, the snow helped because you could really get into the season. But we had 4 Christmas trees in our house, and it was always a big deal to get the Christmas stuff. I can still smell the Christmas stuff in the boxes. This is how deeply just into my core it is. I can still smell it. It is just a huge tradition for us. And putting the ornaments on the tree, I mean, some of them are from, you know, when my parents were married, when the first year they were married, they still have some of those ornaments that they put on the tree. So just going through that and then getting to do that in my own home where Julie and I, we've been together 16 years. We've been married 12 or 11. She's going to kill me. I think it's 12 now. Being able to pull out the ornaments from when we were in New York City for New Year's Eve and when we were in Napa and Florida and Hawaii and just all of those places and getting to relive it, I love it every single year.
Well, and what do you think the difference is? Do you notice the difference? Because I know I'm from Illinois also, so you grew up with snow as well. So do you feel that there is such a difference in California with not only the weather, but with the way people celebrate?
Well, it seems like it seems much more commercial here, I guess. And because, you know, every year the malls are competing for the biggest Christmas tree and stuff like that. And so part of it, you go back and forth with, are we just being more commercial here, or is that the way we have to do it in order to get into the spirit, because we don't have a lot of cold weather and we don't have snow and we really don't have a ton of trees who lose their leaves. And so there isn't, unless you're really looking for it, you can't find that significant point when the season changes. I mean, it was just 80 or 90 degrees again last week. So I think part of it is we do it up with a lot of glitter and stuff because we have to. And also I think I guess people are just less connected now than they used to be, and there's a lot more distraction now. So I don't know if it's just the years that have gone by or it's the place that we live, but it doesn't seem as deep as it used to be.
Right.
In a lot
right.
of places.
I agree. And, you know, again, we always stress, at least I stress, is as much as I talk about the gifts and as much as I talk about Santa Claus and all of that, we must not forget the real reason what's behind Christmas and, mm-hmm. and why we're celebrating in the first place. So I think that that is also extremely impactful and powerful as well. So, but, you know, we only have like a minute and a half left, so what would you like to leave our listeners with today about Ryan Burris and about, you know, what you're working on and things like that?
I would just want to remind everyone that that they have a heart that was given to them by a creator who loves them. And it's sort of like a couple weeks ago when I was out on the streets with a homeless guy who I'd seen a lot. He was in a really dark place, and I just reminded him that he, although he felt alone and isolated, that he had a creator who knows, who has counted every hair on his head, who has his name written on the palm of his hand, and who just loves him deeply. I think people just need to know that, because that is what we're so searching for in our hearts, and that's where all the sadness and everything comes from, because we just don't know that, or maybe we just don't believe it enough.
Well, you know, I truly believe that too, and I just want to thank you for taking the time out, for being on Coffee Talk with Patricia today, for sharing and for being open and honest. And, you know, even more than that is just thank you for your friendship and thank you for being who you are, because you are a true man of faith and a great husband, a great father, a great community leader, and again, a great friend. So thank you for being who you are, and, you know, may God bless you and your family, and have a wonderful holiday and a great week. And everyone
Thanks, Patricia, out there listening,
yes, and everyone else out there listening, I just want to really thank you for taking the time to listen to Coffee Talk with Patricia. May God bless you and your friends and your family. And I'm going to end on this short prayer, friendship. A friend is like a tower strong. A friend is like a joyous song that helps us on our way when golden ties of friendship bind. The heart to heart, the mind to mind, how fortunate are we. For friendship is a noble thing. It soars past death on angel's wing into eternity. God blesses friendship's holy bond, both here and in the great beyond, a benefit unpriced. Then may we know that wordless joy, that precious are without alloy, a friendship based on Christ. God bless you all. Have a wonderful week. Talk to you next Friday.
Thank you, Patricia, and thank you, Ryan. And because you guys have both inspired me, I want you to listen to this.
Woo! Sure is hot out here. No, I don't mind, though. Glad to be free. You know what I'm saying?
Mind, I just can't seem to find a reason to believe that I can break free. But you see, I have been down for so long, feel like all hope is gone. But as I lift my hands, I understand that I should praise you through my circumstance.
Radio.com.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Elevate with Kate.
Good morning. Welcome to today's edition of Elevate with Kate. My goal is to give you the encouragement, information, and support you need to live above your circumstances and fulfill the destiny God designed for you. Let's start off with my personalized version of the Prayer of Jabez from 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 10. And if you haven't bought the book, The Prayer of Jabez, get it. It will change your life. Please pray along with me for your own life. Lord, bless me greatly today. Expand my impact and my opportunities in such a way that I touch more lives for your glory. Let your hand of power be with me. Let me do great things for you. Let people see your glory and power through my life. Keep me from temptation. Keep me from making mistakes. And direct my path away from those things that you do not desire for me. Lord, protect me from sin. Father, I ask you to speak through me today. Touch the hearts that need a word from you. Anything I say that is not edifying or that isn't from you, Lord, let it fall to the ground and be blown away with the wind. You alone know what each listener needs to hear, and I ask you to communicate that truth by your Holy Spirit in Jesus' name. Today I want to talk about how you make room in your life for God's blessings. It's so funny how we accumulate things, not just physical things, but thoughts and behaviors in our lives that block us from God's blessing. And then we wonder why God isn't doing anything in our lives, and we don't realize that it's because our lives are so crowded, we don't have enough room for what he wants to give us. When I was a baby Christian, I came across, back when I was 18, it came across this scripture, Psalm 37, verse 4, says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. And I thought that meant that God was like, you know, my personal vending machine, but a more mature Christian, and I knew that wasn't true because I could see that my life was not going that well, and I was really seeking God, and I was delighting in him. I thought knowing Jesus was the most amazing, wonderful thing. The grass was greener. The sky was bluer. I could hear the birds sing. It was like I had moved in from black and white to technicolor. My life changed radically, but I still had problems, and I didn't see why God wasn't giving me everything I wanted, right? It says right there in that psalm, I was delighted in God. He would give me whatever I wanted. And then I spoke with a more mature Christian, and she explained to me that if we let God, he will change the desires of our heart to what he really wants for us if we trust him enough to do that, if we trust him enough to surrender what we want and allow him to replace it with what he knows is best for us. And that is not an easy thing to do. But if you can bring yourself to the point where you surrender your desires to God, then he will replace them with the desires that he wants for you, and then he'll give out those things to you. So it's a win-win situation, but it starts with our decision to believe that God loves us and that he wants the best for us, and no matter how wonderful our fantasy of our life is, that what he desires for us is ultimately much better. So if you can make that little decision, just turn that switch in your head and say, okay, Lord, I want X, Y, and Z. I want this person, that house, and that car, and that job. But Lord, if those aren't the things that you want for me, I surrender those desires to you. I take my hands off of those, and I give you permission to take away those desires. I release them. And I know that if those are the right things for me, you'll give the desire back, and you'll give me the thing with it. So Lord, I just trust you, and I release it to you. That is a very powerful thing you can do. But I need to backtrack just a little bit because there is one huge obstacle to God's blessings that we are often unaware of. Every one of us, I don't care how holy or how perfect a life you've had, we all have been harmed by other people. We've been hurt. We've been betrayed. People have sinned against us. And God asks us to forgive those people. And honestly, they don't deserve it. And God knows they don't deserve it. The power of forgiveness is this, that it releases you to be blessed by God, like a wall you put up between you and God. When you forgive someone, no matter what they did to you, you forgive the person, and every time you remember a thing that person did, you re-forgive that action against you, not because that person deserves it, because they do not. But what you're doing is giving them back to God so he can deal with them. I used to always quote the scripture to my kids when they would take revenge on each other. I say, the Bible says, revenge is mine, I will repay, says the Lord, which is probably not the most holy scripture, but it satisfied my kids, so it would back off of each other, because really, If God wants to punish someone, he will. But when you're angry and resentful, the only person you're harming is yourself. And that anger and that bitterness, no matter how much that person deserves it, it's not hurting them. It's hurting you. It's going to result in cancer, anxiety, depression, major illnesses. That's been proven by medical science. So let it go today. Now, what if you, I have to admit, when I went through a divorce after 17 years of abusive marriage, I had a restraining order against my ex-husband. When we had to go to court, I had to see him. I couldn't stand to even hear his voice. I remember one time I was driving in the car with the kids, and I don't know how he did it, but accidentally he dialed me, which was a violation of the restraining order. And I knew it was an accident because he was talking about me to somebody else, but he wasn't talking to me, but I could hear his voice in his car. And I was in my car, and I physically felt like I was going to throw up. I felt so ill just hearing the voice of that man who had tormented me and my children for so many years. I really thought I was going to have to pull over and throw up. And then I just made a decision. I said, Lord, I cannot forgive this man. And 6 months later, I still could not forgive him for all that he had done to us. But I finally said, okay, Lord, I can't forgive him, but I'll tell you what. I am willing to be willing to forgive him. If you can make me willing, then I can forgive him. And it took a couple more months, but the Lord just chipped away at me. And once I said I was willing to be willing to forgive him, that opened the door for the Holy Spirit to start healing me and working on me. Within a couple of months, I was able to forgive him. And it didn't wipe out everything he had done. Like I said, the enemy, Satan, will bring those things back to mind. And just your daily life, you'll remember something and you'll want to go right back to that place where you hate that person because they deserve to be hated. They hurt you. You want to hurt them with your hatred. But it just doesn't work that way. It's not harming them. It's harming you. So every time I remembered an incident, a thing he said or something he'd done, it was, when people would ask me what it was like, I didn't like to talk about it because it would bring it all back, and then I'd have to forgive him all over again. And I can't tell you how many thousands of times I had to forgive him. But after a year or so, it just, I didn't feel any anger towards him anymore. It was just a major miracle. God is so awesome. I felt like 100 pounds had been lifted off my shoulders when I was able to let go of that. Let me say, this day he doesn't deserve it. But I just knew that I deserved it. I deserved freedom from carrying that burden of hatred and resentment for him. So the first thing you need to deal with if you want to be blessed by God is allow him, and I know it's awful, but you might want to do this with a pastor or a really dear friend, is just pray with them to forgive the people that have hurt you. Not easy, but it's really the key to getting your blessings, and I know you want those. So get rid of any unforgiveness or resentment. And then you're open to get what God has for you. Now, here's the deal, is we have this list of things in our mind that we think will make us happy. You know, the car, the job, the house, the husband or boyfriend or wife or whatever it is, the children you want to have. We have these fantasies, you know, and they're not all from God, but some of them are from God. And that's why I was saying with Psalm 37:4, you have to release those desires back to the Lord so he can give you what he really wants you to have. Now, often that means letting go of things you are comfortable and familiar with in order for God to give you what he really wants to have. I'll never forget this little story. It's one of those things that go out by email over the Internet, so a lot of you have probably heard it, but it still ministers to me. It was about a little girl, and every night she'd go to bed, and she had these pearls. It was just costume jewelry. Every night she'd go to sleep with her pearl necklace on, and her daddy would come in, tuck her in, tell her how much he loved her, and he'd say, you know, sweetie, why don't you give those pearls to Daddy? And she'd say, oh, no, Daddy, I love my pearls. I can't sleep without my pearls. And he'd say, all right, sweetheart, I love you. Good night. And he'd go out. And it kept going on. Every night for a week he would ask her, sweetie, why don't you give me those pearls? And she'd say, no, Daddy, I love my pearls. I love my pearls. And finally, after a week of asking her every night, when Daddy said, sweetheart, won't you give me your pearls tonight? She said, oh, Daddy, you know how much I love my pearls, but I love you more, Daddy, so you can have my pearls. She took them off, and she gave them to her daddy. The next day when she woke up, there was a package there from her daddy, a beautiful velvet box, and it had a real pearl necklace just for his little girl. As long as she held on to the fake pearls, she couldn't receive the real pearls that he had for her all along. It wasn't that she didn't love her daddy, it's just that she loved the things she had, and she didn't realize that her daddy had something so much better for her. That's how God is about you. He loves you, he adores you, he wants to give you the best things for you, personalized things just meant for you, that maybe nobody else could appreciate, but he knows they're going to touch your heart. But you're so busy clinging to that almost good enough thing, that good enough for right now, like we say in the dating world, that Mr. Right Now instead of Mr. Right, just holding on to that thing that makes you a little bit more comfortable, feel a little bit special, and God's saying, no, I have something so much more amazing for you. Let go of what you're clutching. Open your hands. Let go so I can fill you back up with something wonderful. And a lot of the Christian life is like going into the Marines. I was just speaking to someone about this last weekend, where you feel like sometimes when you release things to God that are precious to you, that you feel like you're being broken down. Like when you go into Marines, when you go, or any armed service, when you go into boot camp, they do. They break you down. They change your identity. They chip away anything you thought you had going on before. They rob you of anything that you thought was cool about you. You know what I mean? They break you down pretty much to nothing, and then they build you back up again, and they make you a Marine for life. They build you up to know who you are, to have your identity, to know that you're strong, that you're part of a team, that you are ever faithful, loyal to your country and to your fellow man, and that you're patriotic, all those things. They build those back into you. Before, there wasn't room for those things because you already had your identity, but they break all that down so they can make you into a Marine. Well, that's what God does with us if we'll let him. It can either be a so-so kind of person that kind of messes around with being a Christian, or we can allow God the freedom, break us down, not in a harsh way, but just to remold who we are, to let go of our identity, who we think we are, so we can replace it with his identity, which is who we were really meant to be from the time we were born. There's another story that has always kind of amazed me, one of those internet stories about a guy who gets to heaven, and he's been a good Christian all his life. He's obeyed God, he served God, and he's thinking he's going to get a lot of rewards when he gets up there. So when he gets to heaven, an angel leads him into this room, and it's got 100-foot walls, it's 100 by 100 feet, and every inch of the walls is a shelf. And on every shelf is beautifully wrapped gifts that are unopened. And when the angel brings him in the room, he said, oh, are these all my rewards for all the things I did for the Lord? And the angel looks at him sadly and says, no, these are all the gifts God had for you when you were still on the earth, and you wouldn't open them. So I don't ever want to be that person that gets to heaven and finds out I left a package on the shelf. Heck no, this life is not worth it. There's nothing I have or that I can get on my own that is better than what God has for me. So, again, let go of anything you have that might be junking up your life so God can replace it with what you need and what he really wants you to have. And I'm not kidding you, it won't be easy and it won't be comfortable, but it'll be challenging, it'll be exciting, it'll be fulfilling, it'll be a daily adventure walking with God. I mean, you can keep your average, mediocre life if you like and just have Jesus as a side interest. But that's not going to work for me. I'm all in. I'm all in, and I want everything he's got for me, and I'm not going to stop halfway. So there is nothing this world can give me that's worth passing up what God has for me. And then what about physical things? You know, I look at my closet, and every once in a while I think, my Lord, I have not worn that for a year. If there's anything in there I haven't worn for a year, I take it and I put it in a bag, no matter how cute it is or how much I think I'm going to shrink back to that size. I just pack it up and I give it away. And it's a funny thing. I have done some personal coaching, some life coaching, and one of the things that you find is that nature, or should we say God, or the universe, whatever you call it, abhors a vacuum. Everything gets filled up with something. So if I clean out my closet, I am guaranteed that I am going to get other stuff to replace it. Not that I'm going to go out and buy it. Somebody's going to be giving me something. I have found that always to be true. But when my closet is packed side to side and there is no room, I don't get anything new. I like new stuff. So once in a while, I just get rid of the old stuff. But what about relationships? You know, if you are alone and you're asking God for that boyfriend or that husband, that Mr. Right that he's been working on all these years just for you, and trust me, if you don't have the gift of being single, he has been working on a man for you. You can take that to the bank. So how do you make room for that person in your life? Are you so busy that you wouldn't even be able to fit them in? And are you the kind of person that Mr. Perfect would be interested in? I'm not talking about your outward appearance, but that honestly is the least important thing in a relationship. Are you the person inside that your Mr. Perfect is going to be attracted to? That's the thing that you need to work on. So just say, Lord, I want to be a perfect woman for my perfect man when he comes along. So just get me ready. Change whatever needs to be changed. Fix whatever needs to be fixed. If my schedule is too full, Lord, open it up. If there's something I need to be doing that will put me in the path of this right person, show me what it is, Lord. And I trust you to make that successful. I trust you, Lord, to be my matchmaker. I trust you to bring the right person into my life. Now, am I saying that you should never use dating websites? No, nope, can't say that at all, because a good friend of mine just got married at the age of almost 50 for the first time to an amazing man, and she's a beautiful woman. She's just never met the right man, and she's been faithful in serving God forever. And just now, she's met the perfect man, and she met him on a Christian dating website. I have so many friends who met their wives or their husbands on dating websites, so I would never say not to do that. I would say if it's a God thing, if you ask the Lord and he says, yeah, go for it, you can do it. For me, it never worked, so I'm not even going to go there. It's not something I enjoy doing, and it's not worked for me. Doesn't mean it won't work for you. It has worked for a lot of people I know. And so what about our children and our loved ones? Do we feel like they owe us something? Maybe we expect them to behave a certain way or turn out a certain way. Are we keeping a list of wrongs against us? Again, that is an obstacle to God blessing you. I met a pastor when I was homeless at this church, and he was a wonderful guy. And his only daughter had died, actually, an older boy. Took her to his house, got her drunk, and she died of alcohol poisoning. It was the first time she'd ever drunk alcohol. She died at the age of, I think she was only like 17. And he was so devastated. And I listened as my friend, Randy, who's a street preacher, talked to this man about his daughter. And he said to this pastor, he said, Peter, suppose I give you my Rolex watch. And I say, you know what? This is a really valuable watch, and I'm giving it to you to take care of. Now, I'm going on a trip. I might be gone for 6 months, might be gone for 10 years, but when I come back, I want to see that Rolex watch, and you're going to give it back to me, right? And Peter said, well, sure, I would give it back to you. So Randy said, all right now, when I come back, that's going to be mine, right? And Peter said, yes. He said, well, Peter, your daughter was a gift from God, a very valuable gift, but she was on loan to you. Now, are you going to be angry with God because he came back to get his precious gift, and it wasn't on your schedule? Peter said, no, I can't be angry with God. She was his child. She was a gift from him. So that's how he was able to relay this truth to this pastor who had lost his precious daughter. So really, anything you have here, I have 10 children altogether. I'd say almost none of them have turned out the way I would have predicted or asked for, and it doesn't matter. They are precious to me, and I know they're precious to God. And I don't want to ever have that thing between me, barrier between me and my children, because I resent the way they choose to live their lives, or I resent that they're not the Christians I want them to be. It doesn't matter. They're not my property, and I'm not accountable to God for who they are as adults. I trust God to take care of them, to save them, to keep them safe. So if you have somebody that you've got an account against, you have a list of wrongs, let it go. Tear it up. Burn it up. Get rid of it. Nobody owes you anything. Nobody owes you anything in this life. So I have to go back to what happened with me and how I got to the point where God can turn my situation around. But during my marriage, I lived for my children because the marriage was so bad. So they're my reason to keep going, especially after the divorce. And then when I went through being homeless and I lost all my kids, it was just devastating. I didn't think I could live without them. So I ended up living in a little church. I couldn't get my kids back. It had been almost a year, and I had a court date. It was it would have been a year in January since I'd been homeless, since I'd lost my kids. I had to go to court that Friday, and I hadn't made any progress. And where I was living, I could not get my kids back. And if you don't start getting your kids back after a year, they start putting them in legal guardianship or putting them up for adoption. And I was helpless. I knew my time was running out. So one morning I went up to the upper room at this church where I was staying. I lay on the floor, and I wept, and I prayed in tongues, and I wept, and I wept, and I prayed in tongues for hours. And so I was so exhausted, I fell asleep on the floor. Because in the natural, it was completely impossible. There was no hope. There was no way I was getting my kids back. And finally, when I woke up after sleeping off my crying, I said, all right, Lord, here it is. If I never see my kids again, if I never get them back, I will still love you. And I will still serve you. I will not be happy, but I will serve you. That very same week, I received my first miraculous breakthrough. Now, always remember that what you do today will open doors for you tomorrow. From 1993 to 2000, I worked at Taco Bell Corporate in Irvine. I was one of six people who took turns writing daily devotionals that went out by email. When the Internet came in around 96 or 97, they started going out to divisions in Kansas City, Wichita, Dallas, and Louisville. Before long, when the Internet started becoming more commonplace, they were being sent to other states, other companies, other countries, and I would often get answers back from people in Zaire, England, Ireland. I mean, it was amazing. When it was my turn to write, I did what I do today. I tried to be vulnerable enough to share the mistakes I'd made and the lessons God was teaching me personally. So in the midst of this very dark week where I was facing that court hearing, I was writing these devotionals. And I received a note back from a lady named Sherry who said she'd been reading about my life through my devotionals for years, and she had just realized that she lived about 30 minutes from where I was staying at that church. So she invited me to lunch the following day, which was a Wednesday. So we met for lunch. She asked me questions about myself and my life, and I could tell she's trying to figure out if I was a nutcase, right? I can't blame her. So she told me she was a widow and had no children. Then all of a sudden, out of the blue, she invited me to her home that night. And trust me, I was not feeling sociable, so I tried to dodge the invitation, but she would not let me off the hook. So finally I said, okay. So that night, I drove into her gated community where she gave me a tour of her beautiful five-bedroom home and asked me if I wanted to live with her. And I was shocked. And I explained to her that I had a court date that Friday, just 2 days later, about getting the first two of my children back, and she said, Kate, I will go to court with you, and I will tell the judge I'm taking all three of you. And you know that's exactly what happened. That Friday, she went to court with me, and the judge gave my two oldest girls back to me. And we lived with Sherry for 2 months until I found a shelter that would take us. I never would have dreamt that something I wrote and sent out by email would bring a major breakthrough when I needed it. So I'm just going to go over a few points again. Last-minute thing is how to make room for God's blessings. First thing is to let go of all bitterness, resentment, and unforgiveness, and erase the list of things that you think people owe you. Just give it back to God. He can replace anything you think you need. The second point is to ask God daily to take away any desires that are not from Him and to replace them with the desires He wants you to have. Then you can pray Psalm 34, verse 7, with confidence, knowing that He will not only give you the right desires in your heart, but then He will fulfill those desires. And anything you have that He doesn't want you to have, give Him the permission to take it away. Your burden will be lighter when those things are gone, no matter how dear they seem to you. A third point is to get rid of any material things that are cluttering up your time or your life. Nature hates a vacuum. God will fill your life back up. Don't be afraid to let go of the so-so to get the very amazing things God has for you. And the last point is, anytime you have an opportunity to minister to someone or bless them, take the opportunity. You are planting seeds for God to bless you in return. And when you have needs in your life, someone will come along to meet those needs later. It's like they say that energy never goes away. When something's destroyed, the energy still exists. It just goes into another form. Well, that's how your blessings are. You bless someone else, and you will be blessed in return. Well, Maria, I see we have almost no time left. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Oh, my gosh, woman. I cannot wait to see you tonight. We've got lots to talk about. You have totally spoken Holy Spirit information through you to me and my ears, and I'm sure all of your listeners. So amazing. Tell everybody where they can find you on Facebook. You have 20 seconds.
All right. You can find me at elevatewithkate.com. Well, Facebook, look for Elevate with Kate. It's C-A-T-E. And well, I thought I had my phone number here, but I do not. I messed up there. I'm so sorry. But go on Facebook and look for elevatewithkate.com, and you can connect with me there. I believe my phone number is there on that website. Or email me at kate@elevatewithkate.com. Have a blessed day.
ForRadio.com.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.